in, well, you remember the L'Histoire de la Folie of Michel Foucault. He speaks of the origin of modern reason, and what he says essentially is that in order to define the limits and the space of reason, the essential act is an act of segregation, identification of the unreason. Well, the subject of my speech will be the cosmic spasm. But in order to understand what this expression that comes from Félix Guattari means, I think that we should understand something about the present condition, the present cartography, the present map of the relation between reason and unreason, starting in a sense from the methodological suggestion of Michel Foucault, reason, ratio, the measure in the modern time. The measure is essentially based on a quantifiable, identifiable relation between time, labor, and value. Time is the main object of manipulation and of reduction of of the modern reason. And at a certain point, we have started understanding that something was out of joint. At that level, something was collapsing at the level of the relation between time, labor, and value. The very definition of value is no more possible when the possibility of measuring time in the way that we have known during the industrial age, when this possibility starts to become indeterminate and frail, at that point defining value becomes almost impossible. And so violence takes the dominant place in the definition of value. I think that if we start from this end of the measurability of value, we understand something about the present chaos at the level of the definition of value, of course, but more generally, the present chaos in the possibility of defining a relation between the mind and the world. I don't know why, but when I think to this break in the relation between time, labor, and value. I think to Iggy Pop in Arizona Dream, in Arizona's Dream, the soundtrack of the Kusturica Arizona Dream, when he says, fish is mute, expressionless, because the fish knows everything. And so I've never understood why Iggy Pop tells us that the fish knows everything. But there is some kind of wisdom in this sentence that I want to better understand. So at a certain point, time starts accelerating. And first of all, it's the effect of technology. Technology has always played the role of the accelerator of productivity, of the intensity of labor, of the intensity of human experience in general. But at a certain point, this acceleration makes a jump. And we shift from the sphere of the relative acceleration of the industrial age to the sphere of the absolute acceleration of the digital technology and of the networked working relation. Acceleration. You know, the accelerationists were good guys by many points of view, say that the acceleration is not a bad thing because remembering Marx in the Fragment of Machines, they know very well that acceleration of the relation of production means the opening of a new age of the social life and of social production, a new age in which becomes possible a reduction of necessary time labor up to the point of the final disclosure of the communist paradise and so on. I agree with this description of the process of acceleration, but I have a small objection to do in relation to this accelerationist idea. I mean, my point is that they forget about the body. The body is taken in this process of acceleration. The body of the worker, of course, but more and more the general social body is taken in a panicking process of disproportion between the infosphere, the sphere from which we receive infostimulation, and the psychosphere, the intimate sphere in which we try to elaborate this stimulation in an emotional way and in a rational way. This elaboration gets more and more difficult and at the end totally impossible when this acceleration becomes our naked existence in front of a white noise of infostimulation coming from outside. This is one of the dimensions, the most evident dimension of the present chaos, of the present panicking effect of our exposition, of our exposure, of our being in front of the infospheric acceleration. One side. Then there is another side that I start seeing more and more every day for personal reasons, maybe, but not only for personal reasons. The other side is the senilization of the world, the senilization of the humankind getting growing old, getting more and more old. You know, 100 years ago, people who my age were considered wise people, and so they were so rare that if you have the luck of being 70 years old, what an experience you should have accumulated nowadays. One out of three of the people that you see in the streets are 70 years old, so they don't deserve any more much respect, and particularly they are not the symptom of some wisdom, they simply are the symptom of being out from the game and being obliged to stay inside the game. The white race, forgive me the expression, but beware, it's coming back, this expression. The white race is particularly senile, and this is why we see the Trump phenomenon rising on the scene of the world, not as a strange phenomenon of madness, but as the dominant trend of the time to come. In a sense, the age of Thatcher is fading, not so fast and not so completely, and this is the good news. Maybe actually it's true. If you think about the social consensus about the neoliberal ideology in the 90s, in the 80s, and you think how much that consensus has been destroyed by the Seattle by the Seattle movement in 99 up to the Occupy movement in the world in the last years. If you think how much that consensus has become weaker and weaker, you understand why the Thatcher age is fading. Although I know very well that the Thatcher domination, the neoliberal dictatorship, is not based essentially on consensus. It's based much more on the unavoidability, inescapability of a complex of techno-linguistic automatisms obliging the conscious, sensible organisms to stay inside the machine because there is no way out. No way out. The impotence. That is the strong perception that all of us have felt in the last 15 years, from Seattle to Occupy. Impotence means exactly this inability to find a way out from the neoliberal machine, from a machine that we do not consent anymore, that we do not recognize, do not accept, but we are forced, obliged to stay inside. Then comes Trump. And what is Trump? Well, don't forget that Trump, like Kaczynski, like Le Pen, like Salvini, I am talking of the most powerful workers' party in the world. I mean, 70% of industrial workers of the world nowadays are voting for this rising fascism. Well, it's not new. I mean, between 1928 and 1933, the same thing happened here. The worker class, in conditions of impotence, facing the inescapability of the financial machine, of the financial humiliation, of the financial impoverishment, in conditions of impotence, go towards the fascist promise of a strong reactivation of the energy. The white race comes back. That is the bad news. And it's until some years ago we have been thinking probably that the dissolution of colonialism little by little was going to bring the world towards a new possibility, a new, well, no way. We will not go out. We will not go peacefully out from the colonial legacy. Coming out from the history of colonialism implies a war, which has already started, which is the present proliferation of aggressiveness of the impotent humankind. Well, the Trump effect is, first of all, this reclaiming the superiority of the colonialist, dominator, exploiter, white race, and make the white race great again. This is the real meaning of the slogan of Trump. Good luck. The sensible and reasonable Barack Obama comes to the fore, and with his elegance and intelligence, he says, you know, politics is not a reality show. Why not? This is the answer of the majority of the white population of the United States of America. I come from a country that has already known Trump in a miniaturized form, maybe, but the story was the same. I mean, coming to the fore and playing the game, the cynical game of transforming daily life into a reality show is paying a lot, because the accumulation of frustration and of cynicism is preparing the mind of the majority to play the game of a reality show. We cannot win in the real world. Maybe we can win in the Trump's or Berlusconi's reality show. And little by little, Barack Obama becomes a character of the reality show of Trump. I mean, the old reason becomes more and more part of the cosmic spasm. That is, so what should we do? Obama tries to reclaim the place of reason, of politics, of democracy. Does not work. I know from my small experience that it does not work. I am not saying that Trump will win the elections and will, I don't know if he will become the president of the most powerful country ever. Frankly, I prefer not to think about that. he has already won, in a sense. He has won at the level of the social imagination, of the transformation, of the frustrated, humiliated daily life of the white worker class of the world into a reality show. Why not? And so what should we do if it's impossible or not so productive, not so useful to call people to the old good rationality of democratic politics and so on? Well, I think I recall what Félix Guattari was saying about the problem of cosmic spasm, and the definition that he gave of his brand of psychoanalysis that he called schizoanalysis. What is the meaning of the word schizoanalysis? Well, he says, in a sense, that if you want to deal with the being out of joint of the human mind and of the world, if you want to deal with madness, madness, just wait a minute, because I want to be better precise on this difficult to use concept, madness. If you want to deal with suffering, you should not call people to become reasonable. No use. You should rather enter in the couloir, in the dark, but also hyper-colored couloir of madness itself. I would propose a distinction, which has, I don't know if it's based on some vocabulary, but I would propose a distinction between madness and craziness. And when I say madness, I mean the obsessional, paranoid, a need, craving of a reduction, the reduction of the present to the past, the reduction of the multiplicity to the unity, and this kind of paranoid need of an order is the origin of the madness of power. I will use the word craziness in order to understand what happens when you try to get to tune in with the hyper-proliferation of panicking info stimulation, when you try to enter in the couloir of suffering, when you try to interpret suffering not from the point of view of reason, but from the point of view of suffering itself. Suffering is the subject of the coming process of liberation, of the coming process of what? Of harmonization, if I can use this word, of syntonization, if I can say so, of syntonization of the social mind with the accelerated infosphere. This is what we need. We need a different rhythm, a different way of elaboration of the emotional and intellectual relation between mind and the world. The schizo is someone, actually the schizo is not someone, the schizo is the proliferating subjectivity or singularity which is looking for a different rhythm of interpretation of understanding. A psychiatrist called Andrew Cameron, many years ago, in 57, I think, wrote a book about schizophrenia as a form of interpretative over-inclusion. The concept of over-inclusion is interesting because of what is the schizo doing actually? He's not accepting the idea that this is only a microphone. It's also a microphone, but it may be many other things. You know, the metaphor is no more a metaphor for the schizo. I can say that this is a flower in a metaphorical way, but I know, being not schizo, who knows? I know that this is not a flower. And when I started thinking that the metaphor has no more brackets, that the metaphor can become the real meaning of things, you enter in a dangerously suffering, painful dimension that we label as schizophrenia. But in this sense, we understand the productivity of the schizo. The schizo is someone who is able to go beyond the established limits of meaning. And you remember Ludwig Wittgenstein saying that the limits of my language are the limits of my world. Interesting idea, but I want to explore this sentence in a way that has not been attempted so far. As far as I know, when Wittgenstein says the limits of my language are the limits of my world, so one thinks, okay, my word is here because my language is unable to say something beyond this limit, this word. Actually, I think that Wittgenstein was a poet. He's speaking about the possibility of going beyond the limits of language and so of trying to grasp the possibility of going beyond the limits of the world. The schizophrenic over-inclusion is all about this going beyond the limits of the world. Craziness and e volta nostra poppa nel mattino dei remi facemmo ale al folle volo sempre acquistando dal lato mancino. Says Dante, says Ulisse. This is Ulisse who says, at a certain point I spoke with my colleagues in that boat going nowhere, going towards unknown waters and unknown lands, and I told them, considerate la vostra semenza, fatti non foste a vivere come brutti, ma per seguir virtute e conoscenza. I told them, you are human beings, so you are not obliged to respect the limits. Being human is exactly being able to go beyond the limits towards a danger, of course, but also towards a possibility. You see the possibility. We have been focused too much about on the concept of potency. And we have forgotten, in a sense, that the real problem is not, well, potency is, has something to do with the process, but the core of the problem of the future is possibility. And of course, someone can tell me, but if you don't have potency, you cannot deploy possibility. Actually, if you think about the concept of impotence in all the senses, you see that impotence is all about the inability to fulfill desire according to the rule. The problem is, what is desire? What is the rule of desire? What is the the implied possibility? How can we desire in a way which is not the way of the known potency? The fish knows everything. And, well, at the end, I agree with all the things that Morozov said before and with his says in general. But I would not speak of the Silicon Valley as a coherent, a consistent wall. Otherwise, no way out forever. I would speak of the Silicon Valley in an extended way. The Silicon Valley, of course, is here, is wherever the general intellect is elaborating the world according to the capitalist rule, to the rule of accumulation, of growth, of profit, of competition. But inside the general intellect and inside the Silicon Valley as a geographical and social place, there is a fight, there is suffering, there is panic, depression, fear and suicide. This is the starting point of the future. This is the starting point of the cosmosis. I did not explain the cosmic spasm, so the spasm is the effect of an acceleration of the muscular vibration. Spasm is a painful vibration, and in a condition of spasm, the only thing you can do is relax and try to find a different rhythm. Chaosmic, in the Guattari's parlance, means at the same time chaos and a new order, or a new harmony, a new syntony. And you remember that at the end of Qu'est-ce que la philosophie, de Lucien Guattari say that there is an alliance between chaos and order. And we fear chaos because chaos is painful, is producing pain in our mind. We lose the ability to follow the rhythm of the infostimulation. We feel a sense of painful craziness. But take it easy. There is no possibility of restoring the order of the past, the measure of the past, the reason of the past, democracy, politics, old concepts unable to give us the possibility of dealing with these crazy new rhythm that we have to be able to tune in to. So I don't speak of the Silicon Valley as a consistent wall, because I prefer to think that it's a place of social conflict, a place of class struggle, a place in which the suffering communitarians are looking for a possibility, for something that gives us the possibility of going beyond the present chaos and to start a chaosmotic process of re-harmonization. So I looked at the United States of America again, and I see those people of the digital generation massively voting for Bernie Sanders. And I say, what's the meaning of it? What are they doing? Is it a political act? Of course it's a political act, but it's not essentially a political act. It's much more, I would say, an ethical act, and particularly, I would say, it's an aesthetic act. it's an act that wants to discriminate between what is ugly and what is good in human life. And they look back to their parents, to the 40, 50 years aged parents, the mother, the father, who have been obliged to believe in the Thatcher commandments and have been obliged to be competitive and performative, effective, and they say, I don't want to be like you, I prefer the grandfather. I look back to an old story that I don't realize. So, yes, socialist, what does it mean? I don't care about it. It's a little bit nicer. And that is, you know, I think that the Sanders generation, the digital generation that is voting for Sanders, let's not call them the Sanders generation, please, but the digital generation that is voting for Sanders, and seems that it's a huge majority of those people who have learned more words from a machine than from the mother, well, these generation is not doing something for today, for the next November elections. They are preparing, I beg your pardon, they are preparing the age that comes after the present catastrophe. Believe me, we will not escape the effects of the financial predation. We will not escape the effects of the present destruction of the social solidarity and so on. We will not escape the darkest decade of our life. That is coming, is unavoidably coming. We have to start thinking about the day after, if a day after will come. And thinking about the day after is exactly what the Sanders voters are doing, in my opinion. They try not to retract from the acceleration. They know that the kingdom of acceleration is the only place we can live in the future, and they know that the backlash, the effect of the acceleration is a painful spasm. But they also feel that the fish is mute, expressionless, because the fish knows everything. Thank you.